Welcome to the Authentic Persuasion Show, a place where business and thought leaders come to weigh in on important sales-related topics that you can use in your sales career and life. I'm your host, Jason Cutter. My mission is to get your help in changing sales from something prospects fear to an act of service they actually seek out and appreciate. Whether you're in sales, leading sales teams, or own a business, I hope this helps you improve your selling effectiveness and you can go out into the world as an authentic persuader. Hey, everybody. Welcome to another special guest episode of the Authentic Persuasion Show. So my special guest today is Stephanie Toma. So she is a Forbes featured leadership and life coach, certified hypnotherapist, best-selling author of the transformational networking book, Confident Introvert, which is where we're going to spend a lot of time talking today. She's helped thousands of people celebrate their strengths, step up into authentic confidence, which, you know, hits me where I love to talk about and share. And she helps people make meaningful connections. Stephanie, welcome to the Authentic Persuasion Show.
Hello, Jason. Thank you for having me.
So as soon as I saw the title of your book, and I was like, this is amazing. We need to talk. One of the things you point out, and I know that one of the things you try to help people understand, is confident introvert seems like an oxymoron, like jumbo shrimp or military intelligence. General overview, we're going to dive into just a bunch of random topics from it, but just kind of a highlight for people who are like, no, this woman's crazy. That's not a thing. That's not possible.
Yes. Okay. So basically, where the title came from was being commonly mistaken as an extrovert. So being an event host and being an MC and being comfortable public speaking, sometimes there's the assumption, oftentimes there's the assumption that, oh, you must get your energy from this. You must really thrive on this. You're definitely an extrovert. And I felt like I had this secret where, wait a second. So people see when, let's say I'm on a stage or at a networking event, but what they don't see is all of the downtime that fuels these more active activities. So I thought about what would it be like if I were to more overtly claim this title of introvert and shift the focus away from where we get our energy and personality to confidence. So upon first glance, like jumbo shrimp, confident introvert, what? Like, because there's this misconception that introverts are always necessarily wallflowers or lacking in confidence. And that's why there's that level of introspection and maybe self-deprecation or whatever, when really what you're seeing with people who are more public facing is a level of confidence.
What I think is super important where you drew the line as far as kind of defining it in the terms that people think is the confusion between introversion and shyness, right? So shyness is a fear and worry of embarrassment and a lack of confidence and just that outward focus of like, what are people going to think? I don't want to do this. I don't want to attract attention to myself, versus introversion and extroversion, which is, like you said, where people get their energy, what people focus on. Introversion, as you mentioned in the book, is thinking to talk. Extroversion is talk to think in that kind of outward thing. But then shyness and confidence is something totally different, which I think is important because most people, like you said, introvert, wallflower, shy, hide in the corner, doesn't want to interact with people. And that's not the case by the definition of that.
Exactly. And it can be the case. So certainly, you know, correlation does not equal causation, right? We've heard this before. And this is another example of one of those instances where people have been typecast a certain way, let's say, for showing up in this society that really prizes being more classically extroverted. So, for example, in school, being the person to raise your hand and speak up and, let's say, be in the school play or whatever it is, that, at least in American culture, is usually more overtly celebrated than someone who's, let's say, writing for the school newspaper or doing those activities that are a little bit more solitary by nature.
Right. Solitary, kind of behind the scenes, not needing to be the loudest outgoing person.
So, but I mean, it's not to say that there can't be loud moments and excited moments. So everyone has this capacity to express such a broad range of emotion and a broad range of excitement. So another misconception is that when an introvert is excited by something, that they're still super quiet about it. They can be, but I think these rules that sometimes, you know, they're sociological, they can help us categorize people and make sense of the world, but they just simply don't always apply.
Yeah. And obviously, one of the big things, life in general, is the always and everyone and never type of statements, which is just like this blanket assumption that if one person's like this, everyone's going to be like that. So that is not supportive. But you're right. And talk about this, because we talked about this real quick before we jumped on here, is the appearance of people who seem to be extroverted, but they're not. So I'm imagining like you on stage, me on stage, you in front of a group, me in front of a group, doing podcast stuff like this. People just assume that you and I would be extroverts because we're doing this. Other people are not, which means if I'm doing this, then it must be I'm an extrovert, right? And so how do you address that?
Yeah, so it's for a broader purpose. For example, when I first started public speaking, one of my very first experiences was as the moderator of a panel. So my goal was really to help emphasize the voices of these female founders at this General Assembly panel. And I really enjoyed being the person to facilitate the conversation, to dig deeper. It was very journalistic by nature. And then I ended up getting the opportunity that was pretty much the start of all of this public speaking and then coaching that was beyond career coaching, more into that life realm, which we're all in all the time, by the way. So yes, Networking for Introverts, that workshop and now webinar that came about was through attending and hosting all of these networking events, meeting someone who gave me an opportunity, said, hey, I have a platform. I'd love for you to be a speaker. And up until that point in time, I'd been the facilitator, I'd been the narrator, I'd been the MC. But in terms of being the sole speaker, I hadn't done that yet because I wasn't clear on what is my message? What do I have to share with people? And she said, anything that you're an expert on. So it was nice and wide, open-ended. And I ended up making a list of, okay, here's what people know about me. People know I'm a community builder, networker. I love events, all of that. And then what people don't know, of course, there was a longer list than this, but what really stood out was, oh yeah, I'm an introvert. I get my energy from solitude. That's a common misconception. So I decided to put those two things together, networking for introverts, again, because I do like this sort of making these statements that seem like, oh, wait, that's not how it's supposed to be, or that's not possible. And really, the thing that kind of can skew our perception of these things is just pre-existing beliefs about what it means to network, about what it means to be an introvert, about what it means to be confident, that can keep us from making these connections and building bridges between seemingly unrelated things.
Yeah. And obviously I'm drawn to that. I think that's great. It's one of the things, this networking for introverts, I think is huge, which is where I want to spend a bunch of time talking, because I'm imagining the listeners to the show are salespeople, sales leaders, independent solopreneurs, independent sales consultants. So maybe they're selling for a company, but they're like 1099, they're on their own, they're doing networking. Back in the day when that was legal, it would have been in-person networking, and now they're doing virtual networking. So what I want to do is, I think it would be great for you to share some of that stuff, especially where I got a lot of value from your book was in the myths around networking and what people think networking means, whether it's in-person or virtual or just one-to-one like this, what that means versus what it really could be for you.
Yes. Okay. So to start out with some of the myths, these are fundamental ways that we tend to think of networking. So one of the very common misconceptions is that it's by nature transactional and fake. So there's this idea that there's a very specific way that I need to show up, right, in order to be perceived and received in a way that acts as the basis for a relationship. So what happens here is people maybe read the best practices list and, okay, I need to, again, back in the day, shake hands in this way and use these greetings and talk about these topics, but not those topics. And it becomes so formulaic that what you're missing is the human piece, the humanity of networking. And ultimately, one of the main reframes that I make in the book and with clients that I work with is that networking is making new friends. And before you dismiss that as total fluff, let's think about this for a second. So networking is engaging with people, right? And in our society, pretty much it's a capitalistic society, there's money exchanged for goods and services to have a roof over your head, all of those things. So everyone needs a job in order to exist in the way in which our society currently exists. So whenever you're interacting with someone new, whenever you're meeting up with a friend or a potential business partner, you're always networking. There's always the potential to plant those seeds and build those bridges. So that's one of the most powerful reframes to humanize networking and to realize that there are some best practices, right? So there are certain topics that I would stay away from, such as small talk. Ask, like, for example, starting with the question, what do you do? Is don't do that. It's because especially, so let's say that the person is, maybe they don't want to really talk about what they do or they're in between things. It just can kind of seem like a fishing question where you're trying to ascertain, is this person valuable enough for me to speak with? And even if you don't mean it that way, it can be perceived that way. So even starting with, how are you? Like, as a human, how are you? And to be ready for a real response. And of course, there could be the pleasantries of, oh, I am well, how are you? But every now and then, people will give you more detail, a little bit more to work with. And you can begin to forge a sort of relationship that has roots in rapport. So I can also go into this. There's the concept of report versus rapport. So Deborah Tannen coined these terms. And I mentioned this in my book, Confident Introvert, as well. And report is more, okay, tell me the facts. This is my goal. How can you help me achieve this goal? That's transactional. Oftentimes it can be where I do this, you do that, shake hands and we're done. Versus rapport building is more about establishing some sense of emotional intimacy and knowing and finding out things that you have in common. So I do think that the way that networking is beginning to evolve and take shape, especially through these huge changes that are happening in the world. I don't need to say what they are. We know what they are. But there's a tendency which excites me towards building rapport and having these deeper conversations where, of course, there can be goals accomplished either during or after these conversations that have career value or monetary value, but that's not the guiding force in these conversations.
I love that transition from what you said about networking feeling fake, slimy, kind of this like transactional yuckiness that people kind of expect, to the relationship building, to the rapport building. And yes, it is cute and fluffy and it doesn't sound professional, but going into it with the goal of making new friends and looking at it that way and seeing where it goes from there. And I found, probably like you have, is that when you start with that intention and it's about getting to know people, seeing who you're interested in, seeing who you vibe well with, and then letting it go where it's going to go and just see where it ends up instead of like a hunting transactional event where there's that networker that's just on the prowl handing out business cards and trying to talk to as many people as possible, like, which I know that's one of the myths that you have where the goal in networking is to talk to as many people as possible. That's one of the things I know most people don't like who are resistant to networking.
Yeah. So you're bringing up the archetype that I call Slimy Stan. So Slimy Stan is just as you've described. And it's this archetype, this character. And actually, you've probably seen a Slimy Stan in your day, right? Where it's the person that has a bunch of business cards that doesn't ask how you're doing, is frankly not interested. They have a goal. Maybe they want a job. So they go up to every single person or every group of people. They interrupt the conversation and they just say, hey, this is my name. This is what I need. Here's my card. Bye. And ultimately, are those people successful? Shorter answer is no. Like, it doesn't work. It doesn't resonate. It doesn't land. And especially for those of us that, let's say, are either newer to networking or find it challenging or just find it really unappealing for a variety of reasons, what helped me in my journey of having hosted 1,000 events, and if I've hosted 1,000, I've attended a lot as well. So it was such a growth process for me several years ago, beginning this journey. And what I ended up starting with was approaching a single individual, so someone by themselves. And my goal was imagining they might be uncomfortable or they could be uncomfortable. But then again, that could be a projection. Maybe they're completely fine on their own, right? But going, entering this mode of my goal here is to help make them feel comfortable, to get to know them and to help make them feel comfortable. Because sometimes when social anxiety creeps in, it's because we are very self-focused. I am an advocate for being self-focused to an extent. It's great to make sure you exercise, eat well, and prioritize your fundamental needs so that you have more to give in the world. But guess what? It doesn't serve us in a networking capacity when we're so in our head about, oh my gosh, how's my hair? How's this? How's that? It's like, you know what? No, let's shift the focus to the other person. So I started out with focusing on where's that one individual that I can meet. And you'll pretty much know right away if there's a sort of click. It's more of a gut instinct of, oh, this is going well, or I'm developing a sort of rapport. And it doesn't happen with everyone, but viewing it through the lens of being more of an experiment and not putting too much weight on, I need to make my best friend today. I mean, even that can be stressful. So just thinking of it in terms of, you know, I'm on a scavenger hunt to find out what I have in common with this person.
Yeah. And I love that. And I'll tell you, like, from my experience with myself, where I would identify, especially after going through your definition of everything on introvert versus extrovert, that in a networking situation, where I've shifted to is if I end up with one good conversation with one person that had a good rapport with and may lead to something and just want to continue chatting with, for me, that's a successful event versus collecting a handful or a pocket full of business cards and working the room, if you will. And I think that holds true for a lot of people who resist or hesitate networking for what they think, right? Or the slimy stance that they think that's what it takes to win the game of networking.
Yes, I think it's possible to have compassion for some of the slimy stands out there because they are well-intentioned. They're doing what they think they should do, right, but ultimately it's not serving them or anyone else. So I think that's a great point to bring up.
And it's funny because as you're talking about that single person in the networking event that's kind of by themselves, maybe they're comfortable, maybe they're uncomfortable. I've seen both. I'm thinking the times when I've seen that as an event or I've been that person. And then instantly I was flashing to either childhood scene or a scene from a movie where there's that one kid eating by themselves at a table at lunch and no one else is hanging out. And then somebody gets up and goes over and it's almost like an after school special about making friends. And then you just never know where it goes. And sometimes that's the most value from a networking event that I've seen.
Well, yes. And going back to the person standing alone, we don't know what their story is. They could be perfectly content, or some people adopt a sort of lone wolf mentality that has served them in some context in their lives, because maybe when they did express themselves or they did put themselves out there, they weren't met with the type of response that they wanted or that they thought they deserved. So beginning to understand that, like, let's give these people a chance, that maybe give them an opportunity to have that positive reinforcement.
Yeah. Well, and I think one of the things that I realized too, and this is through the process of just sales and leading teams and then networking, is at the base level, most people are the same. Most people are wondering what they're going to talk about, worried what they're going to talk about. They're at a networking event. Maybe they're a little nervous. Some people know everybody and they feel a little more confident, but everybody's just still human. They all have got their own things going on in their head, and not to be afraid of people, right?
Yes. So that reminded me of another key point. So oftentimes it can be intuitive to, let's say, oh, I'm going to go to an event and bring a friend for moral support. I hear this all the time. And ultimately, I would advise against that, because who are you going to hang out with the entire event if you bring a friend? If you are there to network and to meet new people and to learn new things, certainly you can learn new things from a speaker and from an existing friend. It's healthy to have a separation between, let's say, when you are meeting up for coffee with a friend and strengthening that existing bond versus in a mindset to create and forge new friendships and relationships.
If there's one thing I know, it's that sales is full of failure. Even if you're a Hall of Fame level sales professional, you can make a great income despite losing more than you're winning. If there's one aspect of sales that most people fear, and what keeps a lot of people even wanting to get into sales, it's getting hit with objections. That is why I wrote my latest book, The Sales Consultant Guide to Overcoming Objections, Yours and Theirs. This is the first in my new series of short books, guides filled with what you need for helping you improve your selling effectiveness. No fluff, no long-winded stories, no filler to make it seem more valuable, just actual foundation-building strategies to help you become aware of the true nature of why your prospects bring up objections, the different type of objections, and then specific ways to overcome them that are universal to most any sales process, product, service, or style. Go to Amazon.com today and get your copy of A Sales Consultant's Guide to Overcoming Objections. Or if you'd rather, as a gift to the listeners of this podcast, email me at jason@cutterconsultinggroup.com and I'll send you a complimentary full version of it as my thank you for listening and supporting this show. Yeah, I've seen that when I've gone to conferences with somebody else and like sitting in a session and just like only talking to that person and no one else and not meeting the person next to you or walking around at a coffee happy hour thing versus solo and just seeing who you meet and talk to versus the safety net of your battle buddy, if you will.
Yes. And something that I believe I touched on extremely briefly in the book that really prepared me for hosting these workshops, attending these events, hosting these events is solo travel. Certainly, it can be fun to have certain experiences and do certain activities by yourself. But when you are in a brand new place, you do have an opportunity. And you can think of back when events reopen or even virtual events, how do I want to show up? And just to take steps to be very intentional about, okay, how do I currently show up? How do I want to show up? And how can I bridge that gap?
Obviously, I identify with the solo travel and the solo stuff that you talked about as an only child. So I'm really good with that. And I like that. It's nice to just be able to travel and just see what happens and explore. But yeah, I think that's a good tip. So let's talk real quick, especially as you were talking about Slimy Stan and the pressures of what people think with networking. Let's just address the current situation, which is that for most of the country, most of the world, things are virtual, things are remote. Gathering in big groups at networking events, at least in most parts right now, is not a thing as we record this in the beginning of 2021. And so how does that confident introvert and or the non-slimy Stan show up in a virtual, let's say Zoom networking event? How do you like not work the room, but meet somebody and form a relationship versus like this Brady Bunch window of people in a Zoom?
Yes. Okay. So there are a few different ways to go about forging online relationships and connections. So if you would like to completely DIY it, then my recommendation is to download a few different networking apps and see which one you like best. So I like Shaper, that's S-H-A-P-R. And there's also Bumble Biz and Lunch Club. So those are a few of my favorites that have stood the test of time. There are a lot of networking apps that maybe pop up and within a few months don't exist anymore, but these are ones that are multiple years old. So you can go ahead and log into those and commit to having, let's say, one meeting a week. You can usually have up to five per app. It really depends on just finding what makes most sense for your schedule and for your emotional, mental bandwidth. Again, energy is a huge thing that I discuss in the book as well for those of us that sometimes hit that wall and realize, okay, enough for today or enough for now. It's great to get to that place when we're actually done with our social engagements versus in the middle of it. So that's one way. But if you'd still like to go to virtual events, so there are ways to navigate those virtual events. So there are virtual events that have a dedicated networking component where, let's say there's a virtual speaker, and then afterwards, you will be either paired up in virtual rooms with an individual or in small groups. And I'll translate an in-person tip to virtual. So one of my in-person networking tips is to always be the person that gets the other person's contact information. So it's great if you give away your contact, but that's also giving them all of the responsibility to make that relationship happen and to follow up on LinkedIn and all of that. Even if you give your information, always get the contact info that the other party is comfortable with providing. So usually that's in the form of an email or a LinkedIn link, depending on the context of how you're meeting. Sometimes it's Facebook and Instagram. It really depends on the industry you're in and whatever you think is more personal or professional. If you work, for example, in the wellness space at a yoga studio, then yeah, certainly connect on Facebook. You really have to feel that out for yourself. But there are events, let's say, so this is pretty common, where there could be a panel discussion or there could be one primary speaker, and then there's a chat window on the right-hand side, and there's no dedicated networking. You can still network in those situations. And one way that you can do that, something that I've been doing at some of my events, is creating a spreadsheet for people to put their contact information who have attended that event. So then people can independently look at each individual and reach out to those that they'd like to. Another option is to put yourself out there in the chat and say, hey, I've really enjoyed this conversation and I'd love to connect with like-minded people. Here is my Calendly link for a 15-minute quick coffee chat. So that is putting yourself out there and you don't know what you're going to get back. If you would like to be more intentional, let's say that there's a Q&A section after the panel discussion or after the speaker, then you do also have the option of seeing who asks questions. Let's say that you really liked someone's question and you look at their LinkedIn, you're thinking, oh my goodness, I would like to have a conversation with them. Then you can reach out to them on the basis of, hey, I was able to hear your question and I thought it was really insightful. I'd love to dig deeper into that with you on a one-on-one video chat. And I do think Calendly is a really great tool as opposed to going back and forth about calendar availability. Yes, but if you are reaching out 100% cold, here's a nuance. I would not provide my Calendly link with a first point of contact. If it's the very first, if it's a cold LinkedIn outreach, hey, nice to meet you. I noticed we have XYZ in common. Here's my Calendly. No, wait until they accept first.
And then still pace yourself. And I think all those tips are great, taking the physical in-person networking and events and translating them into the virtual side. And just keeping in mind a lot of the stuff that we talked about and the things that are myths in networking, which is if I go to a virtual Zoom event and there's 20 people there, then I need to collect all those people. I need to download the chat and I need to email all 20 people who put their emails in the chat, right? Just like if I went to a networking event and I had to walk around and I felt this compulsion to collect everyone's cards so I could see what's a good fit, is to not do that, right? And I've seen that where that slimy Stan in the Zoom with 20 people, next thing you know, I'm getting an email and a LinkedIn wanting me to set up a time to talk with them so they can sell me something like insurance. And it's like, no, that's not why I was there. But they're doing that virtual as in person. And what I found is that for a lot of people, they experience the other side of that. And they're like, this feels slimy. I don't like it. And then they think that's what networking is. Mm-hmm. And so they go, I don't want to network because that's what I think the game is. And so I love all the stuff that you're talking about. And really, it's that authenticity piece, right? Like you being you and showing up how you want and really approaching it in that manner.
Yes, I think that's a great point you bring up, the authenticity piece. And that even brings me to another point of doing introspective work and knowing who you are is crucial to being able to show up authentically. So that's something that people don't talk about as much. They're like, be yourself. And everyone is like, oh, great, I'll just be myself. But then who is that? Who am I? Right. What do I stand for? So yeah, I really credit a lot of the way I show up to a lot of introspection, just lifelong introspection. And whether you identify as an introvert or an extrovert, there's always more to learn about yourself and others. So just, being guided by that sense of curiosity.
Yeah, I love it. So one of the things that I felt like just really hit me right between the eyes in a positive way, I forget the exact term. I don't want to say energy sandwich, but you were talking
about.
So you're talking about like before, during, and after an event, a meeting, anything, right? It could be just a Zoom call now, or it could be presentation from stage. Go ahead and explain what that sandwich is. And then I want to kind of share what I've seen as well.
Yes. Okay. So Jason, I'll share where this concept came from. So it actually came after I presented a workshop in person. So back in the day, and during the Q&A, someone came up to me and asked, hey, so I just have a question for you. I'm curious about why you presented about introversion when you are so obviously an extrovert. So there was a slight pause because I'm like, oh, I wasn't expecting that question. Then I decided to answer the question with more questions. And one of them was, okay, so what do you think I was doing before this event? And he said, well, before this event, I bet you were having dinner with friends. And I said, okay, well, actually, I was reading in the lobby for about an hour. And then I asked, okay, so what do you think I'll do after this event? And he said, well, you'll probably go to an after party and maybe another event. And I was thinking, okay, where's the after party? But anyway, I let him know, well, actually, I'm going to go home and then I'm going to meditate and probably call it a night. And what I illustrated right there in that conversation with that event participant was the concept of a solitude sandwich. So it's this, let's say that the peanut butter, the center of the sandwich, is the activity. The really active thing could be the podcast interview. It could be going to a virtual event. It could be having a Zoom call with the family member. Whatever that looks like for you, then the pieces of bread on either side are your solitude. So that is your you time that ideally is tech-free, unplugged. So this could be in the form of meditating, reading, going on a walk. Cannot advocate for that enough. Moving a little bit, especially as many of us are sitting in front of our computers for more time than ever for work and for fun. So yeah, and those pieces of bread, right? The ratio. Just think of all the different sandwiches that exist in the world. There are that many types of solitude sandwiches as well. So you may have a 3-hour event. So let's say that peanut butter is like, that's like that much peanut butter, right? Maybe you need 3 hours on either end to decompress. So Texas toast style bread, or maybe it's really not that depleting for you. So more like a tortilla situation, you can mix it up and play around with different ratios that work for you. And again, a common thread throughout a lot of what I stand for and what the book goes into is releasing our judgments of things and getting more curious.
So glad you finished there, because that's what I was hoping for, especially towards the end there, is releasing the judgment, right? So there's that sandwich, that solitude sandwich. And I know for myself, for the longest time, I judged where, let's say, go to Las Vegas, go to a conference. Okay, when the conference is done, you've got to go to networking events. Like, that's what you're supposed to do. I came all this way. I've got to do these things. And it's just like, oh, pulling teeth. I don't want to do it. And it's like, I feel like I should. And it's like, should, right? It's all this pressure. And or like, okay, when the conference is done, all I want to do is just go relax. And then I feel like I'm doing it wrong because I'm not doing those things. Or pre-conference, like, I don't want to have lots of meetings. I just want to like do my thing and then show up, whatever it is, for the networking event. And it's interesting because I've traveled with enough other people where some people on the extrovert side, like the conference ends and they're on fire and they can't wait to do more and they want to find more people to talk to. And that's their mode. And then my mode's like, no, like I left it all on the field. I worked that trade show booth for 12 hours. Like, I need a bunch of time to just recover. And for people, that judgment piece, right? So other people out there listening to this where they go, yeah, I leave an event and it's just like, oh my gosh, I feel myself shutting down. And there's nothing wrong with that. You're not doing it wrong.
Yes. And I really appreciate what you brought up as well. This whole concept of, let's say that you traveled for a weekend long conference and you think to get the most ROI out of this event, I need to go to the event and the after party. You know, maybe the answer for you is that you only go to one or the other, or maybe you go to a fraction of each, or maybe you even decide to do it all for one day, but your solitude on either end is extreme. Like, you're preparing for this for a full 24 hours plus of a lot of solitude to make sure that you can really thrive during this long stretch. So again, just leading with this sense of curiosity, what would it be like if I tried this, and knowing that there's no right or wrong answer, but to check in with yourself regularly and ask, okay, how am I doing? Because there's no need to have other people point out to you how tired you look. That's something that we should be able to self-regulate.
Yeah. And I think what's great is if you tie that in, what you were just talking about, with what you were discussing earlier about the networking piece, which is the relationships and creating friendships and all of that, where it's quality over quantity. Mm-hmm. So now you're going to that conference. You may go to a fraction of it, a fraction of the networking events, but you're focusing on quality of relationships instead of the compulsive need to check lots of boxes and meet lots of people and pick up lots of business cards. Instead, what fits for you and what's authentic and real for you internally, energy-wise.
Okay. So that just reminded me a fear that many of us have of not being liked. Mm-hmm. So if I show up as my true self, maybe people won't like me. And then if I am well-liked by a lot of people, it's because they don't know the truth. And it's because they just know the shell of me, right? So these are perceptions that some people have, especially those of us that, let's say, grew up and were not popular, by the definition, and kind of had this idea of, wait a second. So one of the examples I go into in the book is one of my experiences with one of the popular girls in school who gave one of my classmates a compliment in front of me. Then we continued walking, and then she whispered to me, actually, it's really, that's an ugly skirt. And then I was so confused. I just said to her, but why did you say that you liked it if you don't like it? Like, the whole thing just didn't compute. I'm like, okay, what? So some of us have had experiences like that where we think if someone is well-liked by everyone, it's because they're hiding something or it's because they're not being authentic. When what's really been instrumental in my personal growth journey in networking has been this focus on not being the person that is for everyone and not trying to be either less of myself to make sure that there's more of a cookie cutter version that no one can find fault in. And people will find fault in that anyway. So why bother? Yeah. One of the parts of confident introvert is called, because I do like to use positive language. I'm a believer in positive psychology and what we give our attention to grows. So it's the reverse of you're not for everyone. We've heard that phrase, but that can kind of harden some of us to really internalize, well, I'm not for everyone. Ugh. A humbug, you know? So instead of going that route, just telling yourself, oh, I will deeply resonate with some people. So that was a really big game changer for me when I realized, huh, everyone's cup of tea, but the people that I do click with, it's really great. So I'm just going to direct my energy there. And this isn't to say there isn't, let's say, opportunity to listen to naysayers, haters, and learn from it. But if that's where we direct all of our energy, that keeps us from moving forward in our careers and our lives.
Yeah, makes sense. So we've talked about it at some length about authenticity. What is your definition of that? What do you think authenticity means if we look at just that word?
Yeah, so authenticity to me is focused on a deep knowing and understanding of yourself. It starts with yourself. Then also sharing it. So there is a misconception sometimes that, oh, you're necessarily being authentic if you do everything in a vacuum, like let's say the artist that creates art that no one ever sees and they're living their authentic life. But it's like, wait a second, another part of being alive and the human experience is our tendency to varying degrees of sociability and inherently wanting to feel that sense of connection with others. And I'll also take this opportunity to go into my definition of love. And to me, love is rooted in deep understanding. So when someone deeply understands us and when we deeply understand another, it allows for a feeling that we could call love, right? So not to go too far off topic, but self-love really is self-love, self-knowing, releasing ourselves from the judgments that maybe aren't even our own judgments that we've internalized from others, let's say over the course of our lives, it happens, allows us to get to a place where we're able to know who we are and claim it.
I love it. I think that's great. So this is the Authentic Persuasion Show. So I know we've been talking about introverts and networking. What do you think when you hear the word persuasion and or where do you see persuasion coming into your success or what you help your students with?
Yeah. So when I think of persuasion, just the word to me, it sounds kind of like languid. You know what I mean? Just sort of the flow of the word. Just it sounds very fluid to me. Persuasion. So yeah, to me, the vibe of the word is definitely just sort of a go with the flow and to not necessarily cut and dry, forcefully, rigidly take someone and say, hey, you need to think this, you need to believe this, you need to agree with me. It's just like, hey, like I'm doing pretty good over here. I feel good. And here's what I think. What do you think? And being able to be in that sort of fluid, receptive sort of state where you're able to get people on board in a mutually beneficial way. So I do think that persuasion can be authentic. And there is a misconception about sales that anyone that's selling anything is a crook or like a used car salesman. It's like, hold on. There are lots of things. Like I know I spend my money on food. I'm really happy about that purchase. I think keeps me alive and all that. So yeah, things that are being sold to you it's not inherently bad. It's sometimes the way in which it's being presented. And the best salespeople, the most authentic salespeople, will not necessarily say every single person and their mom and their dog needs this product or needs this service. It's about, hey, let me talk with you and let me see if this is actually something that can be helpful and beneficial. And as this relates to me and my business and my work, so I work with coaching clients one-on-one, leadership and life coaching and hypnotherapy. When I do discovery calls, it's really about me gauging, okay, what are the pain points that you have? What can I see as being areas where I can help you? And let's say if there are certain things that come up where I think there's someone who could be better suited, then I will not be opposed to giving a referral to someone else who could be a better fit. Because ultimately, what keeps me feeling good about my work and what keeps me being of the highest service is not being for everyone, to serve my people in a really deep way that's rooted in self-knowing, but also getting to know the other.
Actually, I know the answer to this is yes, but how do you feel like confident introverts do well or could win in a sales role versus, let's say, the classic, which is thinking that everyone needs to be good in sales. They need to be an extrovert, right? So how do you see that confident introvert doing well in sales?
Yes. So a confident introvert is not desperate, is not reliant or dependent upon like, oh, I need the sale. There's a different sort of energy. There's a calmness. Let's focus on each piece individually. So there's introversion, mm-hmm. there's confidence. If we're to focus on the introversion piece, having that deep knowing of yourself, which many introverts tend to have, allows us to more deeply connect with and know other people. And perhaps our listening skills are fine-tuned. So being able to really hear people and to give people the space to speak and even have new realizations and to ask the right questions that help guide people to their own decision of what serves them and empowers them most. And then when it comes to confidence, then the confidence piece of knowing what you stand for, knowing that your product or service is of value and standing by that and knowing that a rejection is not a rejection of you. It could just be, oh, that's not a fit. Or even if you think it's a fit for someone and they don't, allowing yourself to be resilient and to have this sense of conviction and knowing that I've done all of this work in preparation for this sales experience that I'm in. And I know what I stand for. And I'm listening to people and being guided by that holistic full process.
I love it. I think that's great. Shifting gears real quick. What did you want to be when you were growing up?
A singer.
Yeah?
Yeah. I have been singing and songwriting, emphasis on songwriting, for a very long time, since I was probably, I would say a toddler, but I wasn't necessarily writing. I was more sort of just singing aloud before I could write. But yeah, that's always been a mainstay. I'm always writing poetry.
And what happened? Why didn't the singing career?
Oh my gosh, I know. So actually, if anyone's curious, you can find my music on YouTube. That's something that I don't talk about all the time. But yeah, what happened? That's a deep question. It's something that I think I decided at one point would be more of a hobby than a career. But that isn't to say that it can't be revisited and play a larger role at a different time. But yeah, throughout my career journey, I think I've found other ways to be of service and I've uncovered other talents that are related. But hey, who's to say that you won't hear me sing it again?
I love it. I look forward to that. What is your definition of success?
Okay, so success, to me, there is an overlap with authenticity. So that deep knowing and owning and being the thing, being the way that you most want to be, bridging that gap between the best version of yourself, who you wish you could be and who you are, and stepping into that.
That's awesome. Last question, the journey or the destination?
Always the journey.
Perfect. So for people to find what you're doing, so there's your website, StephanieToma.com, LinkedIn, anywhere else they can find what you've got going on?
Yes. So I'm on social media. If you go to Instagram, I'm at Stephanie M. Toma. And then on Facebook, it's facebook.com/StephanieToma. then if you're interested in learning more about leadership and life coaching and having a free discovery call, you'll want to go to stephanietoma.com/coaching. And also, I'd like to offer everyone listening a freebie. So it's a free one sheet that gives you some notes from the Confident Introvert book, but also this conversation related to remote networking. So you'll go to stephanietoma.com/freebie for a free networking remotely resource sheet.
I love it. Well, thanks for sharing that. And I couldn't recommend your book more. If that title resonates with anybody, if they think confident introvert, that might be me or that's not possible, definitely check it out. And Stephanie, thank you for being here, for sharing all of this on the Authentic Persuasion show and just doing what you do to help people shift how they see networking, relationships, business, sales, all of that. So thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me, Jason. This was so fun.
Thanks for tuning into the Authentic Persuasion Show. If you found value in this episode, please do two things. Subscribe so you can get each new episode and share this episode with anyone else you know in sales. Together, we can help shift the way sales is done. And if you want to find out more information about how to transform your sales career, or you want help with shifting your sales team from order takers to quota breakers, go to jasoncutter.com. Don't forget that everything in life is sales, and I will catch you on the next episode of the Authentic Persuasion Show.